Hey everybody, Shane here. Let me tell you about my friends at Naked Vine, located at 1624 Clarkson Road in Chesterfield, Missouri, serving up all your favorite wine, whiskey, and local craft beers. Stop by and visit them Thursday, December 20th for some live music from Kevin Babb. Friday, December 21st, Pat Liston. And Saturday, December 22nd, The Scandaleros. I'll be back out there on January 8th with my singer-songwriter storytelling showcase, bringing along my good friends Kara Louise, Cree Ryder, and Drew Schaefer for that one. So do not miss that show. 7 p.m. start, $5 at the door. Full listing of events and everything happening at Naked Vine can be found at nakedvine.net. Be sure to follow along with them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Karen Choi, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today at The Pocket with Karen Choi. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, this is cool. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be hanging with you and getting to talk. This is our first time getting to meet and
that's
stuff.
Right,
we kind of, a lot of these have been happening this way. We've been friendly online for a little while and I've been following some of your stuff and we finally get the chance to meet up and get to talk and get to know more about each other. So thanks again for taking some time to do this.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
You were telling me a little bit off mic, but yeah, I guess you said you grew up in the St. Louis area and then you left for a while.
Well, I actually grew up in Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska.
So I was born and raised in Nebraska and then came to St. Louis for grad school, after I was done with college. And I was here for about five years for grad school and then moved back to Nebraska for a time. And then in the last year and a half, my husband and my family, our three boys and I, we came back this way.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, was it for music or?
Oh, just kind of job opportunities and yeah, lots of different factors.
Because we do have a really amazing music scene here in St. Louis.
It's been wonderful to jump back into. I kind of dabbled a little bit in it when we first lived here, and I had, around that time I was recording my first record, so I was just sort of getting started and wasn't very familiar with the scene, but moving back this time around has been great. It's been a really vibrant music scene to get involved in.
I love it. I've been trying to do my part to document as
That's
much of it
right.
as I can.
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Well known around these parts.
I'm trying. I've been hustling, trying to get around and meeting all kinds of people.
Yeah.
So, and that's I joke about it, but it's kind of the nice thing about having this show is like it doesn't sound as creepy when you want to ask somebody to hang out. Like, you know, it's like
that's
you know,
right.
So anybody else, you're like, hey, you just want to hang out, and I'm like, why? And then I'm like, now I tell them I have a show, and then I'm like, okay,
yeah,
cool.
You have all sorts of official reasons
right.
that you want to sit down
yeah.
across from somebody and talk
right.
to them.
So you said you've been here and back in St. Louis like a year and a half.
Yeah, a year and a half or so.
And when do you like discover music? I mean, is that like something like do you have a musical family or somebody else kind of helping you along the way when you got started?
Well, my dad, he is a music lover and then also he is a bluegrass musician. He played like just kind of for fun with some other musicians while I was growing up. And of course, at the time, we hated it. Like, we didn't really know what we had in front of us, but they would do, you know, family jams or whatever, and all the families would come together and all of us kids would run around and just do our thing while they played music. And so he's always been pushing like that kind of music on to me. In fact, when I was growing up, he would sometimes he's a big Earl Scruggs fan, okay. famous banjo player, sure. And he would put like a picture of Earl Scruggs under my pillow for me to discover when I went to bed at night, and then just was always saying, joking, that I would return to my roots one day, because of course, growing up, we all have like these musical trails, and we all inevitably listen to some horrible music as we're defining our taste, you know. So he was kind of, he was a big influence in terms of like pushing me towards that genre, which I don't know if I'd would have discovered, like roots and old timey country and all of that. Apart from that, so, and then I also, he had a Martin guitar lying around, and so I kind of picked that up when I was maybe, I don't know, something like 14, 15, and just had some people along the way that showed me some things on the guitar, and kind of made my way from there.
Yeah.
So.
What were you listening to at the time when Dad...
when he broke into the scene? Oh, let me think about that. It'll be embarrassing.
Was it like the boy band stuff or something? When he's trying to get you to listen to Earl Scruggs?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I think I was probably listening to my fair share of NSYNC.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have just admitted that, you know, in a recording.
Right. Yep.
And I did go to one of their concerts. And, you know, I remember Justin Timberlake making eye contact with me. I don't know if that happened, but he was on some sort of suspended, like, wire, and he came out into the crowd, my 15-year-old self, or however old I was, I have no idea.
Right.
It's like, I swear he just looked at me. And I want to believe it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fight for that.
Let's ask him.
let's get him on the phone. Right. Do I have a phone a friend in this situation? Yeah, so really bad music, you know, listening, and sorry, NSYNC. I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a lot of just that time period in your life. I mean, like, that was definitely what was popular and things, and I think we all kind of go through those phases where, but yeah, it's like as you mature and then you start discovering there's more content to it than just, you know, cute guys dancing around.
That's right. So, making eye contact with you on suspended wires, you know, from an arena.
Yeah.
I agree. You kind of have to... That's what's most readily available and accessible, so you just automatically listen to that kind of stuff. And then, over time, your tastes focus up a bit.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate. I've discussed it a lot on here, but my parents were big on Southern rock and blues and stuff, so I grew up on a lot of Allman Brothers and ZZ Top, and Dad also liked a lot of classic country.
Yeah.
So I remember hearing like Conway Twitty and that kind of stuff. I remember Dad bought like a Conway box set that had like four CDs, I guess, or whatever, and it was like he played that a lot. And Mom was big more into blues, and so I remember a lot of like Clapton and that kind of stuff. Yeah, so like
seen some good stuff around
you.
So. Well, but let me ask you: do you have like an embarrassing, you know, somebody that you really loved that now you're kind of, because I've admitted it, and so I feel like it's only fair.
I mean, I've definitely talked about. I love a lot of that '90s pop.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll sing every word to some Ace of Base.
Don't Turn Around.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Come on.
And. That's the good stuff. You know, so I like a lot of that. Like, it may be sort of embarrassing, but it's fun. I enjoy it. Like, and I'm not afraid to say that. So
we can own it at this point in our lives.
All right. I like a lot of that kind of, you know, Technotronic and
nice.
You know, these different that different kind of stuff. For a lot of, like I said, a lot of it's '90s for me. That's a kind of, you know, grew up listening to a lot of that, and
that was my music era as well.
Yep. Yeah. So, and I still listen to it. I listen '90s on 9 on my XM or Sirius satellite radio, and then listen to a ton of that, and I love it though. Like I said, it's just fun. I think part of it's nostalgia, but a lot of it's just like they're so catchy. It's like it's such great pop tunes, and you can't help but to sing along and dance. And
they were doing their job, writing good songs, catchy songs.
But as far as my first concert, I'm still very happy with I think it holds up.
You don't have to be embarrassed.
Yeah. But first concert my parents took me to was, my mom took me to was the one I asked to go to was Matchbox 20.
Oh, so, yeah.
1997.
Nice.
At the Dome with Semisonic and Soul Asylum.
So, I feel like we must be from the same,
So that,
they're familiar names.
Yeah, with that record, you know, their first Matchbox 20 debut album was like, was huge. And yeah. I mean, that was, I love that album. All that 3 a.m. and Push and all that stuff. So, like, but yeah, so there was nothing like super embarrassing, I wouldn't say, but those are definitely a big part of my just starting my musical taste and stuff. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, like after that, you know, I started discovering a lot more into my own taste and stuff. And but yeah, so it's cool that Dad's plan kind of worked, I guess, though.
It did for sure. I don't know. I think I heard Patty Griffin. Are you familiar with her? For the first time, like around that same age. And she was somebody that was writing songs like I had never really heard, and I really identified with them and her style. And she put out her first record, Living with Ghosts, and it's very stripped down, just acoustic vocal, and I loved that. So I feel like she's kind of somebody that really started to shift my musical taste, and I've been a devoted fan of hers ever since.
Nice.
So yeah.
So you start picking around the guitar then, and like when do you start kind of discovering an act to write?
Yeah, well, that actually came first, I'd say. I was writing, I've always been really interested in rhyme and just words and how they fit together, and so I remember writing poetry when I was really young, and you know, of course they were just very simple and about whatever was going on in my life at that time as a child, but that kind of came first, just really the fascination with fitting words together like a puzzle to make the rhyme structure work. And then around, I would also sometimes put melodies to them, so it was kind of just waiting, this, you know, lyric and melody waiting for me to have some sort of instrumentation to back them up and create a song, you know, fill out the process. So yeah, that piece came first, and it was the guitar that came along and helped me make those pieces into a song.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I should probably take a moment to note, if you're hearing anything in the background of this, Funky Butt Brass Band's throwing a heck of a party over at Off Broadway next door, so there's definitely a lot of people next door having a good time. So if you hear some horns and stuff, that's what's happening. So big shout out to Funky Butt Brass Band. I'm actually going this evening to their the next show. So
nice. Get a little preview.
Yeah. No spoilers, right?
Yeah.
But no, I love those guys. They're one of my favorites in town to see. But we're talking about your writing, and I wanted to. We did do some live acoustic here at The Pocket. Let's give them a little taste of what you've been up to. This is a song from your latest record called 19.
That's right.
And you can pick up the album and the studio version. Everything's available digitally everywhere.
Yep, all the places.
It's a nice little stripped-down acoustic version of it featuring some of your more finger picking and stuff, which I love that. Sounded really nice. Anything you want to share around 19?
Sure. Yeah, 19 is it's a, you know, story song about an older couple that had experienced a lot of pain in their lives and but managed to maintain, you know, kind of just a tenderness and wonder towards life, which I think is hard. You can easily become jaded when things don't go your way, or when you lose people, or whatever the case may be. So they were kind of the inspiration, but as I wrote the song, it kind of unfolded as more of a universal story about the fact that, you know, there can be a nostalgia for a time when we maybe had a little more innocence and we didn't know the ways that life could unfold, or the pain that we might experience, or the pain that our friends, you know, just loss and life and time going by. And so the idea, 19 became the refrain because, you know, it's the last age before you start your decades of your 20s and 30s and so on. And sometimes, yeah, there's just that nostalgia that pulls you back towards wishing for maybe a time that was a little more simple. And then, but at the same time, I hope that it's not completely a sad song and has some hope for what it means to still engage life in a hopeful way.
Yeah.
We went walking on a Saturday in late February sun. We turned over all the wild dreams we dreamt when we were young. Now I don't know if this old high can take another blow. The years gone by, we can't deny all the pain we've come to know. Take me back to when I was 19. So these decades, they will grow you up, can't unsee what you see. I stack up lost innocence like old magazines. Wish I knew now only what I knew back when I was 19. Promise spring comes on slowly every year. We wait under the last winter snow, try to shake off heavy fears. Now I don't know if this old heart can take another frost. I'm a daffodil, my hope must bloom despite the risk of loss. So these decades, they will grow you up, can't unsee what you see. I stack up lost innocence like old magazines. Wish I knew now only what I knew back when I was.
definitely feel like that's something we all can relate to. I mean, I'm sure we've all said something similar at some point. You know, like if we could know now what I knew then, but
Well, it's funny you bring that up because there's that song. I wish.
The Faces.
What I knew now when I was younger.
Yeah.
So this is sort of the inverse of that.
Right.
Saying like I wish that I only knew what I knew. When I was younger, and that I didn't have all this knowledge that has come through like trial and error. And,
right.
So that song. I think I introduced 19 on stage once by referencing that song, and somebody was started cheering, and they thought I was gonna cover that song. So it was a bit of a letdown for that particular audience member.
Big Rod Stewart fan.
I know. Yeah. Right. So I'll try to work that into the set next time.
But I do think, like, you know, like you're saying, times were simpler then. Like I can imagine, you know, if I could go back, it would be interesting because, like, you know. To avoid the all this adulting that I've had to do and stuff. So
yes, it is very difficult.
Yeah. It was. I think about those times a lot because like we used to have a lot of fun. Like me and my buddies riding around in my car and going, just you know, cranking up all kinds of silly songs
like,
in the car.
You know, you're listening to Matchbox 20.
Yeah,
and
sure.
All of that.
Yeah. I remember. I'm pretty sure I still had the car then, but my first car, I think I still had about 19, but it was a 88 Crown Vic station wagon that I had with like wood panels on the side.
Styling.
Oh yeah. And in the back I had like these two 12 inch subs, and I used to roll that back window down and then like I'd crank up some tunes. And I remember one in particular played a whole lot was this group, the Gourds, covered Gin and Juice from Snoop Dogg.
Oh, nice.
And it's like a bluegrass version, like real fast. And
so that's what you cranked up in your wood panel.
Yeah, just big station wagon bouncing down the road. And
it seems like the definition of cool.
Oh yeah,
basically,
I mean,
is what I'm getting.
If you looked up a picture of cool,
you
would see that.
I'm just pulling that up on my phone now.
Those are some of the memories I think of when I think back to high school and stuff and like all that. Like we, but anyway, just like it was definitely a lot easier times back then.
Yeah, for sure.
But now we got to worry about getting the rent paid and everything.
That's great.
working our 40 hours a week and all that stuff. And
yes.
Again, that's all available. You can check it out on, can you buy physical copies through the website? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, physical copies through Bandcamp, I believe. And then, but everywhere else digitally. And I think Amazon physical copies as well.
Yeah, but, check that out. Yeah. And, we do have a big show. That's why we're hanging out today. We do have a big one we want to plug and tell you all about. December 22nd, you can come over to Old Rock House on Saturday night and see Karen, along with some of my St. Louis favorites, Emily Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
She's incredible.
She is. I'm a fan.
Big fan here. And Elliot Pearson in the Passing Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Is Elliot playing with the full band, or is he?
I'm not entirely sure about that. He might just be playing solo, but we know at least he will be there.
Yeah. Yeah, at least Elliot. And Mammoth Piano, and Christian Smith, who I'm not aware of. So
yeah, and then I think one more that might be added in.
Okay.
Last minute.
But this is gonna be a fun night. It's all put together by Gaslight, right?
That's right. Yeah, Gaslight is hosting, sponsoring, and it's Christmas songs. So we're all doing interpretations of Christmas songs that were done. We're kind of each picking a certain artist, and so I'm doing She and Him, M. Ward and Zoe
Deschanel.
Yes, thank you. And so I have Tom Blood playing guitar with me, and then we're just gonna each group will kind of do their specific interpretations of these classic Christmas tunes. So we're hoping it's just gonna be a fun, like, you know,
sing along
if you know it, and a few days before Christmas, get everyone ready.
Is She and Him a I mean, are you a big fan? Is that what...
Well, yeah, I am. But we did, for this show, I wouldn't say I'm like a, you know, a huge fan, other than this show we try to focus on, like, certain Christmas albums that have done really well and draw from those. So I'm definitely a fan of their Christmas record. And then M Ward, I mean, not to, like, you know, say anything bad about them as a duo, because I love them as a duo, but I came into M Ward's music much sooner, and so I love his stuff. And but yeah, together, love their music. And then we kind of had this body of, like, Christmas albums that you know, have gained a lot of attention over the last few years, or however long. And so I know Emily's playing, like, she's doing Mariah Carey versions of Christmas songs, and yeah,
it's gonna be fun. Yeah,
it'll be fun.
Yeah, that I also think of Zoe from Elf.
Right.
Like, she did some singing in there.
She
even
did.
Too, so.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So doing my best to channel that.
Right. So tickets are $10 and available right now at oldrockhouse.com. You can head over there and purchase a ticket and come on out on December 22nd. That's and right. See Karen live with Tom Blood. You said you guys just met.
We did. We had kind of a, you know, whatever, blind date duo performance.
Right.
Because, yeah, the guy, my lead guitarist, Nick Dahlquist, is out of town for the holidays. And so I was looking for someone to jump in there with me and Tom. I got Tom's name, and so we just met, like, a few hours ago over at Gaslight, and he was phenomenal. So he's gonna play the electric and do maybe a little bit of vocal work, and we're just gonna have a good time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always fun to just jump into a room with a musician and meet for the first time and figure out how you work together and make some music.
Well, it's cool too, because I think Tom's more known as a drummer.
Yeah, he was saying that. Was saying that maybe like four bands currently, or I don't know how many, but a lot of projects as a drummer.
Guys play in several bands.
Yeah, so it'll be good to have him up there in that capacity.
I think the first time I did see him play guitar for, I think they were doing, what was it? For Undercover Weekend, they did like a I'm blanking on the band's name. Anyway, they were doing a tribute set thing, and he played guitar on that because he was a big fan of that band. And I'm blanking on their name right now, but anyway, so that was the first time I learned that he also played guitar too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, one of those people.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but yeah. A lot of these guys are. I mean, that's kind of what's fun too. It's also kind of fun to just discover that they. You know them in one sense, and then you realize they have a total another side of what they do also.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah. So, again, come on out. It's going to be a fun night.
Yeah.
Sing along to a bunch of your favorite Christmas songs. And I wanted to share another one. And this was my particular favorite off of your new album. Immediately caught my attention. It was just very fun. And they kind of talking about, you know, how your dad, that Earl Scruggs and stuff. This one definitely feels a little more of that old timey feel to it. The song's called In the Morning. It was very, very different than the rest of the record, I felt too. Like, it was, and I love the way that it builds. Like, it starts with just your vocals, and then that bass drum comes in and stuff, and then the clapping. And so it was just fun the way it was, like, kind of layered like that. And, you want to say anything else about?
Sure. Yeah. In the Morning, it was really atypical for that record. I actually wrote that song. I had my third son, and I was like sleep deprived. Right after he was born, I was driving somewhere and I had the idea for that song, and I just captured it on a little voice memo, like I do so many of my songs. But I love it because you can hear him in the background. You know, it's like very true to life. I just am writing wherever I can, and so that song is it's really just about the morning time and it being difficult at times to get up and get going. And so I took that to my producer in Minneapolis, which is where I did this last record, and we talked about just trying to do that one live with the band, and he contributed on, like, co-write. He helped, you know, was filling out the song with me, and this is Matt Patrick up in Minneapolis. But anyway, yeah, we got in the room. I was recording the vocal, and the guys were out there with kind of like a bunch of random percussion instruments. I think one of them was like a water bottle jug, like you would put in a water cooler, but filled with caps, plastic caps, and they put a kick pedal up against that. And so it just had this really rattly sound, and all sorts of things we found around the studio just to make all the unique percussive sounds you hear on that song. And so we had a good time with it, and it was really fun. It makes me want to write more songs, put down my guitar, you know, because that song I wrote entirely apart from my acoustic guitar, which I rely on a lot for writing. So
Rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow in the morning. Rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow in the morning. Sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise in the morning. Sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise in the morning. Little known fact to you, all we gotta do to make it through, make it through, make it through in the morning. Little known fact to you, all we gotta do to make it through, make it through, make it through in the morning. Coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour in the morning. Coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour in the morning. Baby's gotta be fed, baby's gotta be fed, baby's gotta be fed in the morning. Baby's gotta be fed, baby's gotta be fed, baby's gotta be fed in the morning. Hey, I should rise the sun, I'm gonna fully rely on all the mercies that I knew in the morning. Hey, I should rise the sun, I'm gonna fully rely on. Rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow, rooster's gonna crow in the morning. Sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise, sun is gonna rise in the morning. Coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour, coffee's gonna pour in the morning.
Lincoln Durham's a big fan of his work, and he's kind of good about some of that stuff, like especially in the studios. Live, when he plays, he does like a one-man band type of thing. Like he plays the drums with his feet and wears a harmonica and plays guitar and switches out like a violin or diddly bow or guitar or whatever and different stuff. So, but on a studio records, you can see like somebody's credited for like playing like a cardboard box and different stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's fun to get creative and find the right, whatever happens to have that right sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to hear that you guys were doing that too in the studio.
We were just looking all around for found objects that we could make noise with.
Right. Yeah. When did this When did this record come out?
So Through Our Veins was in 2016. Okay. So I'm kind of working towards my next project at this point. But yeah, that was a great experience. And that was my second album. My first one I did in 2012, I believe, in Nashville. So yeah. So yeah, this next one I want to do right here in St. Louis. I feel like it's been such a privilege to be involved in this scene. And I feel like I just want to create something here.
Sure. So. Have you done any work with Gaslight? Or how did you get connected with that?
So with Gaslight, we're just doing this show together. And then I'm hoping, you know, we can, in the future.
But how did you get on their radar? Did you become friendly with JB?
Yeah. JB, I think we just connected through social media, I believe. And as so many of us do. And yeah, so I like to, you know, stay in touch with those guys and
right on.
Yeah,
it'd be cool. That's a beautiful little recording studio that I've got there. It's really a unique experience. And but yeah, if you haven't checked out Gaslight, go do that.
It's a great spot. Space, yeah, for sure.
So yeah, hopefully we'll get a new record here soon.
Yeah kind of working towards that end.
Right on. Well, let's drop in one more form. We did another live acoustic here at The Pocket. Also check out thepocketstl.com. It's a neat little spot here for, calls it a jam B&B. So
it's a great space.
Yeah, so thanks again to Dan for letting us hang out here. Yeah. But this song is called Mississippi River Heart and also appears on your latest record. Yeah. And so you can pick that one up. Yeah, what else would you like to add around Mississippi River Heart?
Mississippi River Heart is a song I wrote when I was moving away from St. Louis. It kind of gets confusing, all these details. But, you know, when I moved away after doing grad school. And I just had found that time to be a really formative time in terms of what I was doing musically and just finding my voice as a writer. And then literally finding my voice, like the kind of falling into just vocal confidence, I guess. And so it's about leaving a place that, that is hard to leave. And also I it's meaningful to me because, you know, St. Louis is on the Mississippi, but I've spent some time up in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and I did my record up in Minneapolis. That was just maybe like, we were maybe three blocks off the Mississippi, the studio I recorded in. So I kind of, I don't know, that stuff matters to me. I really love the significance of places. And so this is a song about being drawn to a place and then sad to leave a certain place.
Yeah, very nice.
This month, this year, have left me tired, used up all my tears. I'm half expecting gray hairs every time I look in the bends and it curves and it teaches me to sing and hold the world together with the strum of my guitar and a song plucked from the howling wind. This road has brought me home,
It don't feel like a home to me. You live, you change, you grow. It's like squeezing into a pair of old jeans. Where bends and it curves, and it teaches me to sing. And hold the world together with the strum of my guitar and a song plucked from the howling. Teaches me to sing. And hold the world together with the strum of my guitar and a song plucked from the howling wind.
You mentioned your kids, your children, and do you find they inspire a lot?
A lot of writing?
Yeah.
Yes, they. Well, I laugh just because, of course, they do. But it's also that I try to find time to write within the pockets of life. It's very busy with three boys, but yeah, I really draw inspiration from all over the place, whether it's my kids, my family, or I'm really drawn to other people's stories. So if I hear a story that somebody has shared with me, it's not uncommon for me to, you know, pretty quickly write a song about it, because I've always found myself identifying just like with a good story. And it's not like I'm trying to rip off their story to get a good song, but I truly resonate with parts of people's lives, and yeah.
I think that's I mentioned Will Hogue earlier to you off mic, and there's like, he's kind of gone through, like, mentioned on stage about that, like, people, you know, he sings a lot of songs about, well, he talks a lot about his personal life with his family and his kids, and then like, but then he'll just sing a song about, you know, cheating or whatever and stuff.
Right.
And people are like, he did that. He's like, not all these are true stories. He's like, yeah, but I'd be able to tell that story, you know, whether it happened to somebody else or whatever it is. But, you know, he's just relaying that story and stuff. So, so I think that's what's neat about a songwriter, is able to convey this message and story.
I fully agree, because I think it was Josh Ritter. I was reading an article or an interview that he did. And somebody was asking about a song he wrote and, like, the meaning behind it. And this must have been, now that I'm saying this out loud, it must have been a video interview, because I remember him smiling and saying, don't worry so much about that. Just get caught up in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really, you know, I that resonated with me, because I think that when you, there's a time to share about the meaning behind things, and there's a time when it's autobiographical, and that really drives the story home. But there's also, I think, a song should be able to stand on its own as a story, especially as like a folk singer, or, you know, somebody who writes in that world. You can both find significance in just what you're hearing from the song, as well as finding out what's behind it, you know. And so I think if it becomes about like prying into personal details, that's where you sort of get away from what a songwriter is trying to do. Like they're just trying to tell a good story. And I think for me that it's kind of always a cocktail of like, maybe this part started out as something autobiographical, but then this line popped into my head and I took that turn.
Sure.
And then, you know, I used my imagination and I added this. And so it's really, yeah, it's, I should say it's rarely as straightforward as maybe some people think it is. Like every song is about your, you know, your life.
But I do feel like that's probably a compliment to that they believe you so much that they think that these are true stories. You know?
Yeah,
so like,
yeah, that's a good point.
So in a sense, I feel like you're doing your job if they believe that these are all biographical. You know,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yep, you're conveying something real.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are your kids, your boys taking interest in music yet? Or?
They are playing violin.
Yeah.
So they're starting there. And yeah, but I think I have my middle son, who is about to turn 9, he is really, he catches on really, really well to lyrics and meaning. Like if a song is really powerful or maybe a really sad song, he just can't do it at this point. Like he's really in tune, I should say, to the meaning of songs. And so he'll say like, oh, I don't like that song. Cause you know, I think it, he feels it like inside. So yeah, they're kind of all have their own interests. And right now we're starting in that classic violin stage.
Yeah. Very cool.
But
that could be fun though. Like, you know, maybe when they get a couple years older and start getting to jam with them and,
yeah,
and have a family band thing or something.
That's right. Force them to like all play a different instrument. Right. Yeah. Whether they want to.
Did you get to, when your dad was, you said he played, right? Did you guys do much together?
We didn't really.
Yeah.
You know, he would say that he isn't like, that he just did it for fun. I think he's a great guitar, banjo player. But yeah, it was mostly him encouraging me to do it.
And, right.
Yeah.
I see it today, like my buddy Phil Wright plays harmonica and his son Jack's been playing a lot more guitar and singing writing his own songs and things. And but they've been getting to share the stage together a little bit, the two of them. And like, and I don't know, just seeing them and seeing the smile on Phil's face and like, you know, just I could tell how proud he is that his son's, you know, doing it too and getting to have that moment to share that with him and stuff.
Right.
So
it's probably a really unique experience.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm happy for him and stuff, but I you know, just to, I think that's gotta be a really cool feeling getting to play music with your kids like that and stuff. So
yeah.
Do you play a lot for them when they were babies and stuff? Did you do you write any songs for them or anything like that?
Well, I haven't written songs specifically for each of them because, like I said, it's always kind of a maybe a more broad. I would take that task pretty seriously because I have a pretty high like cheesy barometer, you know, and to me that sounds really difficult to write a song that would not err on the side of like trite and if you're writing for your child. And so, which I know songs have, plenty of writers have done that well, and maybe I can pose that challenge to myself as I'm saying this, but it's kind of like bits and pieces of all of my world.
I do find there's like I think it kind of started more as a goof, some of the ideas, but I think it's fun to see, like, I can recall, like, Jim Brewer put out a thing where he was doing all these vocal impressions of, like, Ozzy Osbourne and AC/DC doing the Hokey Pokey, Ozzy Osbourne doing, like, London Bridges, and, like, all these, like, you know, nursery rhyme kind of things.
Yeah.
I think he did, like, Metallica doing Bingo or something
nice.
Like that. Well, and it was funny, and he nailed it, like, you know, perfectly doing these impressions. But I think, like, some of that stuff's, like, for real now. Like, mm-hmm. they, like, some of these bands have actually went and caught, or went and cut nursery rhyme type of stuff because they have so many kids, and you know, the kids want to hear their music, but not some of their, you know,
not for all audiences.
Yeah, right, professional music isn't necessarily suitable for children, right. But you know, so I was just wondering. I think that's an interesting idea. Like, not that you're, you know, I think your music's suitable, but I think some of the nursery rhyme stuff's kind of mm-hmm. funny to have people have that out there and stuff too.
Well, and I have a number of friends or just, you know, musicians I know through other friends that have created original music for children that's really good. Because right. a lot of it, like, man, I just don't really let my kids listen to that, like, children's music, because a lot of it's so horribly mind-numbing that you just can't handle it. And so when there are artists out there who are trying to create thoughtful, technical, like, you know, technically proficient music for kids, I admire that. I think that's a great thing, because you're teaching kids that, like, the music they listen to should be good as well. It shouldn't just be,
right?
Yeah, you know, the hard to listen to stuff.
Yeah, they listen a lot. They play a lot of that, like, kids bop stuff around the school, and I'm like, man, I can't do that. Like,
can't do it.
Yeah. But well, you mentioned maybe going into 2019, putting together some touring.
Yeah, I'm just kind of working on the upcoming year, and probably early spring is when I'm looking at maybe going out for a few dates. At this point, I'm trying to figure out if I'll do a longer run or if I'll wait till my next record's out or a couple of weekend things. Just, I feel like it's the time of year where you start to do the planning for the, you know, the next year ahead. So that's what's on the radar for me. I'm booking dates for March, and then I'll just sort of go from there. Get some local dates on the calendar.
Sure.
Too.
You get to do much of that yet? Much touring?
I've done a little bit. I'd say mostly, well, I guess there was some after my first record. I've been fortunate enough to do a little bit of it, where I'll travel. I've kind of been all over to the South and covered the Midwest pretty well, because I'm Midwestern, and up in, you know, the upper Midwest as well. And so, yeah, I'd like to get kind of fan out a little bit from there, but I love doing that kind of thing. I love, I love traveling and being, meeting new people in those places, and as a songwriter coming in and performing and then being able to connect with somebody after a show, that's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said the other day that, probably the most, more people that I actually talk to today are people I've met either through music or at concerts, mm-hmm. and like we've become friendly and more than like my high school friends that mm-hmm. We're still friends, but the people that I see the most and talk to the most are probably people that I tend to run into at concerts. And like, I go to a lot of shows by myself mm-hmm. because like, I've tried getting people to go, and you know, they flake on you or whatever. So,
or it's like, late at night.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. Yeah. So,
you know, that's...
I know there's a lot of things, but it's just like, so I've gotten to a point where I just start going by myself, and I know I'll run into somebody there.
Yeah.
That,
somebody
and
then, you know.
And if not, I'll make new friends and start talking. Right. And I always say, like, it's easy to start talking to people because you already got something in common. You're mm-hmm. at the same show. So.
Yep. Just strike up the conversation.
Yep. So.
That's right.
But no, I love it. I love that, like I said, the people that music's introduced me to, and bringing more people into my life. So like, especially if they come out to your shows, I'm sure it's a lot of fun getting to meet all those people.
It is, yeah, and it makes for a more lasting connection. You know, if I go through that city or town again, then there's somebody that is more likely to come out to a show.
Yeah.
Because you've established that connection.
Sure. I mean, I know exactly from a fan's perspective. Every time I've met the people, and then they're always nice to me, like it makes me more of a fan to want to come back to the next one. So
right, it works. It's a two-way street, you know, because as the artist, you feel like what you're doing has some sort of worth. You're not just, I think sometimes when you're singing late at night in a bar to nobody, that's where you question, like, what am I doing? And so those rewarding experiences on a tour or after a show, they sort of help fuel, they give you the fuel to get through, like, the, you know, we all have those times where we've played to an empty room or whatever it may be, and kind of get you through those stages.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, December 22nd, Old Rock House, grab some tickets, come party over there with Karen, Emily Wallace, Elliot Pearson, Mammoth Piano. I think, maybe it's Nene from Mammoth Piano.
I'm not sure. I know they're doing James Brown.
Maybe the full band.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Okay.
Yeah.
But either way, it's going to be a great time over there. $10 ticket to get you in the door. Head over to oldrockhouse.com for more details. Facebook event and stuff, all that through Gaslight and Old Rock House.
That's
so
right.
Check that out. But Karen, I thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a lot of fun getting to meet and getting to share some of your stories and songs. And so hopefully we can do this again when the new record's ready or something.
That'd be great. I'd love to.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you, and I will see you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.